Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we are recording this towards the end of Easter Sunday. We had all the Serie A action on Saturday. So we'll have our winners and losers segment. Excellent Twitter questions from our listeners, including a bonus section of questions for our patrons. And we are going to close with our dear friend Adam Digby on Juve. So I know we've been talking quite a bit about the Bianconeri recently with the elimination in the Champions League and now their 8th Scudetto in a row, which they celebrated yesterday. So a lot happened in Serie A in the race for the Champions League, the race for relegation, which we'll get to in a second. But I want to ask our co-host, producer, and friend, Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I know you're a fan of a lot of sports. You follow a lot of leagues. This Juve title, for a variety of reasons, felt a little bit odd. Maybe the timing right after the Ajax won this season. They've had no competition, really. Probably the one they won by the biggest margin. So let me ask you, you know, can you think of a title in any sport, really, that is comparable to this one? So something that felt completely inevitable, but ultimately maybe a little bit disappointing too.
Honestly, David, this is kind of the most disappointing title I can think of, because when I compare this title to any title that might have been at all underwhelming in American sports, it just isn't the same, because even when the Golden State Warriors win the NBA championship, or the New England Patriots win the Super Bowl, or when the New York Yankees used to win the World Series all the time, those, whether they were expected or not, or whether the series themselves were underwhelming or not, those were the pinnacle of that sport. Those were the highest titles they could win. So really, if you're not a Patriots fan and maybe it's a boring Super Bowl, you say, oh, this wasn't a good Super Bowl, or oh, I hate the Patriots, or oh, they cheated to get the Super Bowl. Either way, it's still very exciting for Patriots fans, or for Yankees fans, or for Warriors fans, or for Bulls fans in the 90s to win those titles, because that was the pinnacle. That was exactly what you were playing for. Now, when you compare that to Juve, no, the pinnacle is winning the Champions League. And I think why this one seems so disappointing, David, for Juventus is because of the timing. Because of the timing. They just midweek got knocked out of the Champions League. And then a few days later, they win the Scudetto that everybody knew they were going to win. So in some ways, if they had just got knocked out of the Champions League a little while ago, this would have felt a little bit more victorious. This would have felt a little sweeter, a little sweeter. But the timing added to it, and it's just, this is not what their main goal is. Their main goal is the Champions League. The Scudetto has almost just become expected. It really has. So, no, I don't really think anything does compare to this, in my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. You mentioned a lot of the teams that come to mind, like Derek Jeter's Yankees, the Patriots, although they didn't win like so many in a row like that. I was thinking even of Jordan's Bulls, where it kind of felt inevitable. But as you mentioned, there's really no other title that they could have won. And Juve, we knew this season with Ronaldo coming on board that the Champions League was going to be the big, really the trophy that everyone cared about. You know, to me, if you kind of have to constantly explain to yourself why you should be excited for this title, that's not a good sign. Where you have to talk other people into why they should celebrate, that's not a good sign. But I think, you know, the inevitability of it, I think we can separate like a Juve's ability. And I think as a club, you know, it's not like they had some rich owners that bought the club out of the blue. This is a ownership group with a new management team that started after Calciopoli. They built their way up. They increased their revenues. They really ran the club kind of like a corporation in a way, like way more than any other Serie A team. So, you know, on one hand, you know, it's inevitable and it's boring that they won. I think it speaks just as much about them as the failures of others. And I get that there are some people that are saying, well, we shouldn't celebrate this at all. This really says a lot about the rest of Serie A. And I agree with that, but I can separate the two. I think Juve still deserves credit for how they've managed their club as a whole. So, you know, this is a record-breaking thing. And Serie A, we haven't seen anything like this. I'd say the closest that I would say as far as winning this title would be Kevin Durant with the Warriors, in the sense that, yeah, the Warriors can't win anything else, but they were already the best team. They had one of the three, four best players in the league. They won even more. This, to me, kind of feels like Juve in recent years. So they poached a lot of the best players from their opponents. Then they bring in one of the two best players in the league. They win anyways. Like, to me, this title for Ronaldo must feel a little bit like Kevin Durant, although Durant hadn't won a ring until coming to the Warriors. And for Ronaldo, he came to deliver the Champions League. And look, he did his part, but the club fell short. So definitely a very odd title. But, you know, I think we should separate the incompetence of the rest of the league for what Juve did to build their club to be this. But the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about, Alex, the race for fourth place, on the other hand, has been rather exciting, but maybe more for the lack of a team really taking charge of this race. So we had the early match Saturday, Milan with a really poor performance against Parma. They take the lead over Castillejo. Bruno Alves ties the game. We had Lazio, who lose a home match to Chievo, you know, who are already relegated. And then we have Roma, who in the first half, I thought, played really well, get a draw with Inter. So the race for the Champions League, it's almost like nobody wants these spots. Inter with a home draw against Roma ends up getting the best result out of the lot when you look at the landscape for the rest. We're recording this before Atalanta plays against Napoli. That'll be a tough match for them, and we have a resurgent Torino. So the race for the Champions League, and we'll get into it in the questions, has been interesting, but also because nobody wants it. So let me get your take on this. How do you feel about this new landscape? I know you and I have been pretty steadfast on Inter and Milan taking the last two spots. Has anything changed your mind on this?
Well, I'm getting a little cloudier on it, David. I'll admit that. So Inter, I'm definitely going to say they're making the Champions League. I think that is almost a foregone conclusion. And Lazio, conversely, I'm going to say are not getting a Champions League spot. But between AC Milan, Roma, Torino, and Atalanta, it's tough for me to decide right now. Now, Milan, of course, they're 1 point ahead. Now, Atalanta have a game in hand, but if they won that, they would still be tied on points with Milan, but they have a better goal differential. So I am going to go with Milan, but I'm not feeling great about it. But if I can make a case for Milan, it's, all right, well, they haven't been playing good football lately at all, or the results have just been poor, just poor lately. So if they could just at all tap into some of the football they were playing, even when they weren't playing great football, David, you talked about it yourself. Sometimes they weren't even playing good football. They were just getting good results. If they can just churn out some better results, then, I mean, that's stating the obvious, then I feel a lot more confident with it. But you know what? I do have to be honest. I'm going to say Milan. That's my answer. It's going to be Inter and Milan in third and fourth. But I think I really have had a tough time giving Roma any credit, because I originally picked Roma to be in sixth place. And I was right that it was going to be a tough job for Di Francesco. That's for sure. But Roma getting the draw away to Inter, they don't have the worst schedule from here on out. They do play Juve, but it's at home, and that game means absolutely nothing to Juventus. So I'm going to say Milan, but I honestly would not be surprised if Roma is the team getting fourth. But I'm going to be stubborn, David, and I'm pretty much going to stick to my guns, because that's just the type of person I am. So that's my answer. What about you?
Yeah, I have to say, you know, we talked about all these teams with squandered opportunities, because we know we talked a lot during the season. Roma against the lower table did very poorly. Milan, in the key part of the season, and they were in the driver's seat since the derby, since losing the derby, a match they didn't play particularly well, have been dreadful. Lazio, complete suicide, really had a chance after they beat Inter at San Siro. And the one team that I'll say that I really like on the rise that I'm not going to exclude is Torino. And they're another team you know, they're right there. If they beat Milan and they're playing next weekend, they're right in the mix. Like Torino, too, in recent matches, they had a chance to really be right there. They lost at home to Bologna. They had a draw at Parma. They had another home draw against Cagliari. But they are a pretty intriguing team. I'll say more than the other teams that we've seen, Torino aren't going to beat themselves. So I'm not going to count them out quite yet. Gun to the head, I'm still taking Inter and Milan, but definitely an odd race for the Champions League spot. A few years ago when we had only three spots, it felt like there was all the teams in Serie A trying not to get third place. And now with these extra two, we're seeing a little bit of these mediocrity trying to qualify over the finish line. But hey, at least there will be something to play for. The Scudetto race, we didn't have any, and now we have two Champions League spots at stake with the rest of the season to go.
Absolutely. And I won't talk about the Premier League, but the same thing, David, is happening in the Premier League. No one wants the Champions League spots. Tottenham, Manchester United, and Arsenal all lost this weekend. And it really is fun. It's fun when, especially in Serie A, Juve have the title decided. Okay, well, what else are we watching here? And it's really fun when these games really mean something. And for the club specifically, these games feel like finals every time they play. So, yeah, it's good football. All right, so we just had a lot of football, so it's only appropriate we do our winners and losers segment. We won't get the Napoli and Atalanta game in there, but we'll get everything else, David. Who are winners and losers from this weekend of Serie A?
Let's start with the Juve match. They beat Fiorentina at home, although Chiesa put in a really good performance. He's been linked to Juve. I wouldn't say his position's a huge priority, but Chiesa on the big stage put in another strong performance. We also had Fiorentina defender Milenkovic, who has been linked to some Premier League clubs, some top Serie A teams, gave Fiorentina the lead. So the two jewels on the transfer market for Fiorentina delivered in this match. This has been a disappointing season for Fiorentina on the pitch. But these two players, if they're sold in the summer, should fetch a big return. I have to say the best thing for this match for Juve, not a strong performance. Obviously, they won the title. I have to say I've been very impressed with Emre Can. Really an intriguing player going for Juve into next season because he can be used in a few different roles. I really wouldn't exclude, especially if Allegri stays reinventing Can as a center back. He can play in the three-man center back where he's kind of a hybrid midfielder. I have to say I've been impressed with him, and I see him definitely as a player that could start for Juve next season. Then we had I'm going to talk a little bit about that Inter-Roma match. Before it, we had Wanda Nara, Icardi's agent wife, saying that they will be staying at the club next season. Take that for what it's worth. I've said steadfast, I think he's staying at the club. Let's see if what her quote says, if it turns out to be true. Interestingly, Icardi didn't start the match. We had Lautaro Martinez starting. When Icardi came on, we had the ultras booing him vehemently, going up strongly at him, but the rest of the stadium really responded and tried to quiet down the ultras. That was quite the scene. I'm not sure if we really see that in other countries. So at least for Icardi, he's got to feel good that the non-ultra fans at San Siro are on his side in the match. I thought Zeko played really well. He's been linked to Inter. Definitely had a good showing there. El Shaarawy continues to play really well for Roma. I think he's probably been their MVP this season. It comes down to him, Manolas and Zaniolo, but El Shaarawy's definitely had a really strong season. And then Handanovic wasn't very busy, but made a big save at the end. And then we had the Parma-Milan match early in the morning. Zapata putting in a good performance at center back for Milan. Castillejo scoring off the bench. Bruno Alves, really underrated at taking free kicks, tied the match for Parma. He's had a very strong season. I wouldn't be surprised to see Bruno Alves, although he's older, on a better team next season in Serie A. And then we have Torino, a team that I've been very high on for some time. Big win against Genoa, gol de Lex by Ansaldi. Really strong performance by their goalkeeper, Sirigu, who I think with Cragno and Donnarumma have been the three best this season in Serie A. And a big win for Mazzarri. Let's give him credit. I think he's done very Well, at Torino, I think he fits in the club's attitude, the way they go about things really, really well. And then we had a former Torino manager, Mihailovic, huge win for Bologna against Sampdoria. Those are four home wins in a row for Mihailovic and Sampdoria. In much better position for the race to avoid relegation. And then we had Spal, huge win at Empoli, really like almost a playoff match in the race to avoid relegation. Petagna, two goals. Petagna has already 14 goals for the season. And he's a striker that does a lot beyond scoring goals. So really intriguing player. Really nice number nine. I kind of would like to see him at Roma if Dzeko goes. I think he could be fit in quite nicely there. So those are our winners. Let's talk about the losers. Flip side for the Juve match, Rugani and Bonucci as a duo. Really still rather shaky. The match for Inter, we had Nainggolan, really poor performance. He really didn't look like he wanted to play at all against his former team. Interestingly, Ranieri didn't start Zaniolo against Inter. I don't know if he had mercy on Nainggolan. So he started from the bench. And then we had Cengiz Under, had another anonymous match. I know he's linked to a lot of big clubs. If Roma can get a big return on him, I would sell him, no questions asked. And then we had Genoa losing at home to Torino. Prandelli, as we're recording this on Sunday, he looks like he could be sacked and they could bring back Ballardini. Ballardini was actually doing incredibly well to start the season at Genoa. That was one of the most puzzling decisions. Maybe he'll come back to help them avoid relegation. Then everyone that woke up early, including me, although I get up early regardless for that Parma-Milan match, that was really boring. Gattuso, we'll get to it in the questions, but definitely not a good display. And then it pains me, you guys know how much I like Milinkovic-Savic, and you'll hear in the interview with Adam Digby, even he reminded me of my love for him. I don't know if you saw, Alex, that was an idiotic red card against Chievo, kicked the player in the back, just really, really silly. I was looking at the pagelle on Gazzetta dello Sport, the game grades. He got a 3 out of 10, which you hardly ever see in the pagelle. And then from that Sampdoria match, lost to Bologna 3-0. Sporting director Sabatini abruptly resigned after arguing with President Ferrero after the match. Ironically, he could end up at Bologna, the team he had just lost to. And then the race to avoid relegation, the flip side of Spal, Empoli losing at home. They're in big trouble right now. Empoli would be relegated. They have to make up 4 points to avoid that. Sentimentally, I like them maybe a little bit more than the other teams, but that was definitely a tough loss. Udinese, their home draw to Sassuolo with a win. They could have been in better shape for the race to avoid relegation. So in Serie A, we'll definitely have the Champions League race. We'll have the race to avoid relegation to keep us busy. And before you know it, we'll also have transfer rumors, which we have a little bit to get to later in the show.
All right, David. Well, let's jump right into many people's favorite segment, and that would be Twitter questions. We get so many good ones. We have a wide variety of them today. So let's start, shall we? First question, David, is Gattuso to blame for Milan's poor attack, or is it on the players?
So you guys know that I really like Gattuso, and, you know, I don't think we can, I mean, his record as a player is not even up for dispute. I don't think you can't not like Gattuso as a player, someone who played with Grinta and will the way he did. So that goes beyond reproach. So let's take that off the table. I'll also say that I really appreciate Gattuso as a man. Our friend Paolo Condò described him as uno sportivo, someone who really has like an Olympic spirit, and I really like that about him. So it goes without saying, I also really think he navigated through a lot of difficulties at Milan, two ownership changes, injuries, Higuain mess and whatnot, but there's been too many matches like the one against Parma. I mean, do I think Milan's attack is fantastic? No, but, you know, starting Borini and really having no game plan that doesn't involve short passes often in the back, You know, he's been there for a little while. I really respect what Gattuso's done for the defense, but I really can't defend it. So I'm going to put mostly on him than the players. The only thing I would say is that, you know, if we're making Gattuso into the problem at Milan, I would disagree. They played like this under Mihailovic, even under Montella. It's not like Milan was playing anywhere like Montella at Fiorentina his first time around there. So it goes beyond him, but I don't think Gattuso's done enough to resolve the attack. So I'm going to give 70% to him and 30% to the players. But it goes to show how important Paqueta is for Milan, because the only time they really looked a little bit better for a stretch was when Paqueta was playing and playing well. So hopefully he'll be back, and it sounds like he'll be back next weekend.
All right, David, I can't help but laugh reading this next question. Given the performance of Italian teams in Europe this season and the poor performances of teams in the race to qualify for Champions League next season, does Italy even deserve 4 Champions League spots?
Yeah, you knew this was coming. And I have to say, our friend Thousand Names, and for those of you that read Italian, he's really been on a tweet storm, some gems since the Scudetto. And he had one on, you know, that it's amazing that Andrea Agnelli is still freely walking the streets after convincing UEFA to give 4 teams to Italy. And he says so many of these top 4 teams don't even belong in the Europa League. And look, you know, I definitely get it, but I think, you know, we talk a lot about being prisoners of the moment, and this has not been a good year for Italian football as a whole. There was a lot of momentum last season, but a lot of it has really kind of died down now. So I'm just going to say, you know, this time last year, we had Roma in the Champions League semifinal. Juve had lost to Real Madrid, but they scored 3 at the Bernabeu. In the Europa League, Italy had done well enough that combined with the Champions League results, Italy had passed England in the coefficient. I mean, there was a lot of momentum. We had Napoli, of course, give Juve their big run for the Scudetto. And I forgot to mention, we were talking about at the top, Juve Scudetto. It's like, maybe we'll give a little bit more credit to Sarri's Napoli, because they made that Scudetto much more significant just because of their efforts there. So what I'm getting at is that I get this has been a really painful, bad year. And this question, I don't blame you for laughing. I totally get if you watched Italian football in a vacuum this season, you'd say, yeah, this makes perfect sense. But things can change rather quickly. But look, there's no doubt about it that this time last year, you could make really a great case for Serie A really being on the rise shortly after Ronaldo arrives. And for some factors, they couldn't control, like Ajax being so great, maybe, but a lot of other things, Italian football, we've seen the things with the racism, the stuff with Bakayoko and whatnot, the VAR. So not a great season for Italian football, but let's just remember that this time last year, we were in a much better position. So there's hope that by this time next year, we're back with the positive momentum.
Amen. All right, David, next Twitter question. You got to pick one. Who should Lazio get rid of between Inzaghi and Milinkovic-Savic?
And the answer is easy. I would get rid of Inzaghi. And actually, I think that Lazio, if they can, I would hold on to Milinkovic-Savic, because his value definitely went down. He's had a very up and down season. Up until 2 weeks ago, I was talking about like the renaissance he was having, and both of our guests that cover Lazio agreed there was a lot of positive momentum. But then this red card, which was really completely inexcusable, this is another thing that people are going to remember from this season a lot more than other things. So I think he's still 23. If I was Lazio, I would definitely try to hold on to him one more season. I would move on from Simone Inzaghi, who this time last year was the hot Italian coach. Maybe put Milinkovic-Savic in a more offensive position and see what can happen with him. So to raise his value, that's what I would do. Get a manager that can definitely get him going.
All right, David. Next Twitter question comes from Uncle Sharma. And the question is, who has been the biggest disappointment in Serie A this season? For me, it has to be Ivan Perisic.
Yeah, I would say Perisic is in the short list, but I can think of at least 2 that are bigger for me. And one is Milinkovic-Savic. And again, I have high standards for him. He had a 2-month stretch where he was excellent, the rest of the way really poor. But my top choice would be Paolo Dybala. I mean, I'm a huge fan of his, one of my favorite players to watch. He's the big loser of the Ronaldo acquisition at Juve. Even the times that Ronaldo wasn't there, not great. He started well in the Champions League last fall, but I think he's had the most disappointing season. Icardi, too's in the mix, but that's more for off-field than anything else, not really performance-wise. I can definitely see the Perisic shout, but I'm going to put Dybala, Milinkovic-Savic, and then Perisic. So I would put them in that order.
All right. The next Twitter question comes from Juan Sebastian Rohrman, and Juan asks, my 8-year-old son, Stefan, believes Juventus needs two defenders and a midfielder besides Aaron Ramsey. Do you agree, David?
Shout out to Stefan. Shout out to Juan. It's awesome that you guys listen to the podcast together. Shout out to both of you. Yeah, I think Stefan is onto something. Maybe on his FIFA team, he's been doing that. Like, I think the defense, we've talked a lot about it. Chiellini being 35, Allegri tried to manage Chiellini, not play him too much, but in the matches that really mattered, he wasn't able to play against Ajax, then have a great performance against Atletico Madrid. I think Bonucci, and we'll get to him in the bonus questions more on him. Definitely a lot of work there. Two defenders, like I definitely think they need a starting caliber center back. It looks like De Ligt to Barcelona is all but certain. Varane from Real Madrid seems to be Juve's top choice. I think that'll be very difficult to get done. There are some other center backs, but they need a starting caliber one. I think Manolas could make sense. He has a lot of speed, something Juve lacks overall. The other one maybe could be Geno as a Romero, although I'm not sure he's ready to have a significant role at Juve this season. Quite yet, but maybe down the road. So I agree with Stefan that the defense is the most important thing that Juve needs to work on. For the midfield, yeah, I mean, I like Emre Can. So to answer that question, it's two defenders in a midfielder. It depends really where Emre Can goes. If he's moving a center back, I think one defender is enough, and definitely think they need another midfielder. I'd also be in favor of selling Pjanic and replacing him and really changing that midfield. But Stefan's definitely onto something as far as the number of defenders and the number in the midfield.
All right, interesting one here. David, any chance we see Max Allegri at Chelsea next season?
You know what I really like about this? It's like all the non-Serie A fans really seem to hold Allegri in much higher esteem than Serie A fans. I'm assuming, Alex, you'd take Allegri at Chelsea in a heartbeat, right?
I think I would. I definitely agree with what you just said. I think fans outside of Serie A regard him as a top manager. I think I would. It just more has to do with the specific direction I want with Chelsea with a transfer ban. But yeah, overall, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think my guess is he will be at Juve. And you'll hear, I really appreciate Adam Digby's perspective, made some good points on the coaches. My guess is if he were let go at Juve, he has 1 year left on his contract. Maybe he'd take a sabbatical and see what happens. I think he needs to be at a top club. When I think of Allegri, I think of someone that can manage a Bayern Munich, a Real Madrid, a Manchester United, like a club like that. I really think we underestimate how important it is, the ability to manage stars and manage the media. And look, I know he's had his issues with some players, but just look at the fact that Bonucci came back. I think definitely I get the issues with his tactical, the defensive aspect of it, but there's so much more to the job there too. But my guess is no, it's not realistic. Chelsea, my guess is if he doesn't stay at Juve, he'll take a sabbatical for a little while and then see what opens up.
All right, David, next Twitter question. What did you make of Danilo being linked to Inter and Kieran Trippier being linked to Napoli?
Yeah, so Friday felt like kind of the first little tease of the summer transfer window on Di Marzio's side. We had these two links So before you know it, it'll be that time of year. It's already late April, so the rumors are, you know, starting to come fast and furious. So the first thing that jumped out at me on both is, like, we always talked on the podcast how the center back's the sexy position on the transfer market. The value of top defenders has gone through the roof. There's not that many of them, and all the top teams need them. I think this is even more true at the fullback wingback position. I think we're going to see this position become more and more important on the transfer market. It's not surprising that Inter and Napoli, who are third and second in Serie A, that's really one of the first places where they're looking to improve. Was a lot of talk on which is the best Juve out of the one that won in the past 8 years in a row. A lot of people picked the team with Tevez, Vidal, Pogba that lost the first Champions League final. And I think that's a great choice, but you look at how poor those wingbacks on that team. We had like the Lichtsteiners, the Evra on their last legs of their careers then. So Juve really improved at the wingback position. They invested a ton in Cancelo, giving a big extension to Alexandra and holding on to Spinazzola. I think Juve knows that position's really at a premium. So we have Inter linked to Danilo, which you could maybe take as another sign that Antonio Conte is coming, because he strikes me as a wing back that fits into a 3-5-2 a lot better. But the thing that stands out is his humongous salary. He's a backup at Man City. His current salary is around 5 million net euro a season. That's around what the highest earner at Inter makes right now. So obviously he'd have to take a pay cut to go there. Inter's been trying nonstop to fill that right back position. They went with Vrsaljko first. Cedric, who came from the Premier League in January, barely played. So they're rolling the dice one more time. And the other one's Trippier with Napoli. Another really came really out of the blue, but Napoli's really trying to improve at the wingback position. There are two starters from years back, Hizaj and Ghulam. I'm not sure those are guys you can count on anymore to be starters. So Trippier is on their list, also linked to Man United. I saw Man United were a bit horrified by that link on their end. What's your take on this? Let's look at it more from the Napoli perspective. Do you think he could help them?
Yeah, I do, but I'm not too excited about Kieran Trippier. I think he's solid. He's actually in a pretty good damn run of form. But overall, he's 28 years old. He's not going to get any better. What you see is what you get. Good right back, can cross the ball well, is definitely not bad in defense, has a little ability to play a right wing back if you wanted him to, if you played three at the back, although Napoli are obviously not doing that right now. I think he'd be good. But I don't ever think that's going to be a signing where he's going to change how you are in the standings, meaning Napoli being second in the standings, he's not going to propel them to first next year. That's for sure. And I definitely overall, if we're just speaking about right backs, it's not a great right back market. But if we're speaking about fullbacks, I think it's a great left back market. But yeah, I'm not nuts about Kieran Trippier. He doesn't move the needle, as you would say, David. Now, me selfishly, I just want to say I hope that doesn't happen, because I do not want El Said Husay of Napoli coming to Chelsea. Nope, nope, nope. Maurizio Sarri cannot have his boy, because I do not need El Said Husay at Chelsea. Nope, not at all. All right, so David, next Twitter question. How do you rate Lautaro Martinez's first season in Italy?
Very, very good. I think it says a lot that Spalletti started him over Icardi against Roma. And look, Spalletti's convinced they can't play together. If I had to pick just one in that match, as much as I rate Icardi, I probably would have done with Lautaro Martinez. Just has a much more complete game, really makes an impact even when he doesn't score. So I think Inter hit a home run signing him. I think he cost them less than 30 million euro. You can get a young striker like that at that price point. You got to be thrilled with what he's brought to the table. So I think his first season has been excellent. I could definitely see him as a long-term starter at Inter.
Yeah, I'm very impressed as well. Very impressed. I was a little skeptical, but not skeptical anymore. All right, David, next Twitter question. Very interesting. If they were to make a Netflix series of the Milan sale to the Chinese, who would you cast?
Well, first off, I think they should do like a proper documentary. I mean, not necessarily, you know, like a series with actors. I mean, and we were talk about it, you know, what movies would you remake, like Bohemian Rhapsody and all. I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, if you have enough footage and it's recent enough, like a real documentary is just better. But if you were to do this one, it's kind of hard to cast the Chinese part of it, although they kind of felt like actors, if you know what I mean, like pretending to be something else. So maybe we can just cast the people who they were pretending to be to play that role, because it seems they were playing a role from the beginning anyway. I'd kind of like to see Artie Lang, the comedian from the Howard Stern show, as Mino Raiola, kind of like a side character with the Donnarumma stuff. I'd like to see Christian Bale use basically the Dick Cheney outfit to be Galliani. And I would just have the real Berlusconi as Berlusconi. He has time on his hands now. His the interview they did with him on Netflix, the special on him, is fantastic. So I would kind of cast that, but I would use as many as the real people as possible, because, man, that really is a pretty amazing story. A lot has been said. The fact that none of these Chinese owners now are trying to get their money back or anything right now really tells you everything you need to know about what happened there. And I'm very proud that on this podcast, we really covered that really well and told you exactly what was going on from the beginning.
All right, David, here's a question I have never really thought of asking you, so I'm glad someone else did. What is your favorite movie in black and white?
So, if we want to go, like, you know, the movies that were made in black and white because there was really no other choice, you know, there's this great Italian movie called Il Ladro di Biciclette, The Bike Thief. It's kind of like a sad, depressing movie, but really, really powerful. There's been a lot of movies made after when there was the ability to do it in color, but to make the movie stand out more, it was done in black and white. Schindler's List obviously comes to mind. Another one is Raging Bull. I have to say, Raging Bull used to be maybe my favorite De Niro movie, but I'd say that movie has not aged well for a variety of reasons now, but still an all-time classic. And I have to say, I love Roma. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast, although a lot of people would tell you that maybe it stands out mainly because it's in black and white, that it wouldn't if it was in color. And maybe there's something to that, but I think that movie really used, you know, what comes with making a movie in black and white really to their effect really well.
All right, David, pick one or the other. Better Guns N' Roses ballad, November Rain, or Estranged?
So, good question. Obviously, two great songs, but if we go on strictly what a ballad is, I would say November Rain. I think Estranged is a better song, but it's a much more depressing and downbeat song. Being in the relationship that Estranged describe probably doesn't sound like a good relationship to be in. So I'm going to pick November Rain. Both are really amazing songs. I think, you know, when you think of like what Axl Rose really is all about, those are the two songs that really stand out. So I'll say Estranged is a better song, but as a ballad, I would pick November Rain.
So last week, we talked quite a bit on the pod on the aftermath of Juve's elimination against Ajax, but I wanted to bring in a guest with, you know, another perspective on what happened. And of course, when it comes to Juve, there's really no one better than our regular guest, Adam Digby. You've heard him on the pod many, many times. He's a great writer for all of Serie A on 442 BR Football. I'm really enjoying his columns on Flow Sports with 10 things going on in Serie A. And of course, he's the author of the best book in English on Juve, which is Juventus, A History in Black and White. So, Adam, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, Adam. So let's start with this. So I know you cover Juve. Everyone knows you love the club. I think you're very objective, though, with them anyways. And I think, you know, when you focus so much on one team or one league, you know, you tend to look a lot of what went wrong there. But I want to ask you, like, if you had to break it down, how much credit would you give to Ajax for what we saw over these two legs? And how much blame would you give to Juve?
I think like any football match, really, unless there's a really terrible mistake, you have to say it's 50-50. I think, yes, Juve made mistakes, and yes, in a lot of ways, they were their own worst enemy. And yes, there are some underlying problems in the squad and with the makeup of the squad that I'm sure we'll come on to later. But you have to give Ajax at least 50% of the credit, because they were a phenomenal team. They've got some really great players. They were really well organised. They were really intelligently set out. They had a really smart approach to the game. And they deserve all the credit in the world for that. They fully deserve their place in the semi-finals of the Champions League, and further if they get past Tottenham. I nothing but admiration for what they've accomplished and for the special group of players that they've put together.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, because you tweeted this and I found this very interesting. So I'd like for you to share this with our listeners. Would you see a common denominator with the teams that have been giving Juve a hard time this season specifically?
Yeah, I do. I think you look at Genoa, Atalanta on numerous occasions, it seems. Lazio have troubled Juve a little bit in the same way. Atletico Madrid, and then Ajax, obviously. I think the common thread throughout all of them is the way that they... I suppose it's the way that their midfields approach the game, when it's a young, energetic, up-tempo midfield that really takes the game to Juventus and presses them in their own half and really raises the pace of the game. I think Juve struggle with that. I think the very pedestrian players that Juve have got in midfield, and that's not really a criticism of them individually, more as a collective. Juve just get overrun in midfield, and then they don't really have any way of playing through or around a team that plays that way. And I think you can look at, certainly, if you want to discard Genoa, you can certainly look at Atalanta, Ajax, and Atletico Madrid and see that those three teams that approach the game in very similar fashion. That they do look to win the ball back in the opposition half. They do... hunting packs, almost, as it were, and they get numbers in and around the ball and really harry whoever's in possession and make it very, very difficult to make even the simplest of passes. And those teams all deserve credit for the results that they've got against Juventus, as much as you need to blame Juve for the flaws that exacerbate those issues. But the way that those teams play is exceptional, and they've given plenty of other good teams lots of problems as well. But there's definitely a common theme in running through those teams for me.
Yeah, very astute observation there. So let me ask you on Ronaldo. So, you know, we're recording this on Friday before Juve inevitably celebrates the Scudetto, but this isn't really why Ronaldo was brought in. It was to make a leap in the Champions League. Juve ends up being eliminated at the same round as last year. So if you could do it all over again, would you advise Andrea Agnelli and Paratici to pursue the Ronaldo deal based on what you know now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you look at what Cristiano Ronaldo's been able to do, the goals that he scored, the speed at which he's adapted to a new team, new teammates, a new manager, a new country, a new culture, a new language, and to just almost shrug that off and just start scoring. He didn't start scoring straight away, but once we got into September, he was back in the goals, and he's done his part, hasn't he? He did his part on Tuesday. I think the boost that he's given to Juve's international profile can't be underestimated, both on and off the field. I think he's been exceptional. I think he's been exactly what you would expect him to be. I think he's been let down by the other moves that Juve made, in truth, and the way that Juve have managed their other resources rather than him. And I think, yeah, absolutely. I think if you get a chance to sign one of the two best players in the world, absolutely you should take it. And I absolutely would do it again if I was Juve. I think it's everything else I would probably do differently.
Yeah, you know, I'm totally with you. It's just, I think, you know, people take things that really don't correlate. Like without Ronaldo, probably Juve doesn't even make it this far. So we agreed there. So let's talk about the manager situation. And, you know, after the match, both Andrea Agnelli and Allegri said they're going to continue their relationship. And, you know, I always take those things with a grain of salt. But let me ask you, let's start with this. There's the other name that has been linked to Juve is a return of Antonio Conte. And in your book, you know, you've covered
how both Lippi and Trapattoni returned to the club. And I always felt like it was a matter of time for Conte till he comes back to Juve. But maybe right now might not be the best time. But let me get your perspective on that. If they do move on from Allegri, would you be in favor of Conte returning now?
Absolutely not, no. And I don't think that's any knock on who Antonio Conte is, on what he means to Juve, on what he accomplished in his first start as manager or anything like that. I think it's purely and simply, you look where this team is. And I think in 5 years, even maybe 3 years' time, Antonio Conte coming back would absolutely be the right thing to do. I think when the current team, when their cycle ends, when there's no more, but when there's no more Giorgio Chiellini, I suppose, is what we're saying now when you look at who he's actually left. And Mario Mandzukic as well, probably. I think once those senators of the dressing room, if you like, once they've moved on and you then need to start again, once it's somebody else wins Serie A and a new cycle begins, Conte would absolutely be the right guy. We've seen with Juve, with Siena, with Chelsea, with the Italian national team, he's brilliant at forging a unit from a team who's previously struggled. And that will be where Juve will find themselves, make no mistake. In 2 or 3 years when the current team comes to an end, they will need that again. And Conte would absolutely be the right man. But I think for right now, with Ronaldo, with a team that's looking to win the Champions League, you can also look at Conte and objectively say, That's not his speciality. That's not his strong point. That's not his strength. And you need a manager who has the tactical nous and the man management skills to bring the best from a team who knows what it takes, from an experienced team, from a team that needs resting and rotating and nursing through those early months of the season in order to peak. We can joke all we like about Allegri getting the team to peak in March and April and May, but that's absolutely what you need if you're going to win the Champions League. You look at a team like Ajax, a team like Tottenham, Barcelona, they're not brilliant in September. They're doing it now, and that's what this Juve needs. They need a manager who can bring the best from them when the Champions League knockout stages come. And I think we know from Antonio Conte that and a tactical flexibility that you need to negotiate playing against an English team, then a Spanish team, a German team. It's not really his forte. You know what you're going to get with him. You're going to get 3-5-2. You're going to get a relentless, unquenchable thirst to win every single Sunday in Serie A. And that's great if you want to win in Serie A. But Juve can win Serie A without doing that, and it would be a waste of their resources. And we would see more of what we've seen now. If you want to criticise Allegri for being stubborn, for being one-dimensional, for being a little bit conservative in his tactics, Conte is that to an even stronger degree. And he absolutely is not the right person for me.
Totally agree. So if you could hypothetically pick anyone, who would you pick to be Allegri's replacement if they do move on from him?
I think the perfect guy is a guy who you would have faced if he would have gone through on Tuesday against Ajax. I think you have to kind of understand that Pep Guardiola is Manchester City. Even before he was there, they built that club to have him as coach. Every appointment that they made under their current ownership model was made with the sole objective of getting Pep Guardiola to be the coach and to do what he is doing. So that to me is completely unrealistic. I mean, we may as well talk about appointing Father Christmas or Easter Bunny, if you will, as the coach, because it's just not going to happen. I think Mauricio Pochettino of Tottenham, for me, I think is a perfect candidate. If you want somebody to take over from Allegri, I think he can pick up the very similar mental approach to the way that he manages his squad, the way that he manages his players, and the way that he sets out his teams. But I think he's probably... If you want to change from Allegri, you're doing it because you want a fresh voice rather than a fresh approach. I don't think there's too much wrong with, aside from the flaws in the squad, I don't think there's very much wrong with Allegri's approach. And I think that is partly why he was talking about continuing, why Agnelli was talking about continuing. It's no surprise to me because I think that there is a lot of strong points to Allegri and there is a lot of merit to keeping him around. But if you're going to move on from him, you want somebody who's very similar. And I see that Pochettino is that. And I think if you want that fresh voice, that, that injection of fresh ideas and a different face to look at the players in the dressing room, I think he's the right man for that.
Excellent. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about the team moving forward, and I'm going to ask you this in a couple of different ways. So obviously next season, the objective is still going to be the Champions League. It is always going to be, once you have Ronaldo, once you've won so many titles in a row in Serie A. So looking at the current Juve squad, which players are good enough right now to be starters on a Juve that wants to be a legitimate contender for the Champions League?
I think definitely Chesney or Perrin. I'd be happy with either one of those. I think having both of them is fantastic for the future and for now. I think it's probably the strongest 1-2 combination of goalkeepers pretty much anywhere, really. I really like that. I think at fullback, Cancelo and Spinazzola, I would say that I'd be happy with both of those, and Chiellini as well, obviously. I'm not, because of the circumstances in which he left and came back, I'm not Leonardo Bonucci's biggest fan, but I think you could certainly win the Champions League with a defence of Chesney, Cancelo, Bonucci, Chiellini, Spinazzola. I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. I think you need reinforcements for those players. I think Alexandro's time has probably come to an end. I don't have any problem with having Mkhitaryan as a backup left back. He certainly shouldn't be starting in games that Juve need to win or that Juve want to advance in the Champions League. If Cancelo is fit, then starting Bisciglia over him is a ridiculous idea. I think you look in midfield, and as I was saying when we were talking about the teams that have troubled you, I really like Pjanic. I think Pjanic is an excellent player. I think the problem I would have, is that he's Juve's best midfielder. I think you look back to when Juve were in the first Champions League final with Pirlo, Pogba and Vidal. If you're honest with yourself, you wouldn't start Pjanic over any of those players.
No.
At that time when Juve had them. Maybe you could make a case for Pogba at that time, but I think knowing what Pogba became and what he was capable of and the type of player he is, you wouldn't start Pjanic over him. So you're looking at a case where a guy who wouldn't be in the team four years ago is now the team's best midfielder. And I think that then cascades down into the rest of the midfield. I like Emre Can as a player. I think he's very useful. I like Blaise Matuidi as a player. I think he's very useful. I like Rodrigo Bentancur. I think he has a great future. I think the problem is that they're in whatever order you want to put them, is again, that they're the second, third and fourth best midfielders at the club. And then you have Sami Khedira. I think Khedira's time at the highest level is certainly finished. I think he struggles with any team, really. Whether it's we see every time, don't we? He plays against the worst teams in Serie A, and Udinese or whoever, and he scores a couple of goals because he's getting forward from midfield and nobody's marking him. But he's lost all of his pace. He's really struggling to make any contribution. And I think that for that reason, Juve need to sign. Aaron Ramsey is a good start. I think they need at least one more, if not two more midfielders, and then address the rest after that. But it needs to be players who are better than Pjanic, almost. Like a Milinkovic-Savic, a Zaniolo, that level of player who can come in and command a starting berth in the biggest matches. Because you need to raise the overall quality of the midfield, and the only way to do that is to sign better players than the ones you have already. Even if not better than Pjanic, certainly better than Matuidi or Can, and players who are fast and dynamic and able to attack spaces, because that's the players that Juve don't have at the moment. All of those players, Pjanic, Matuidi, Can, Bentancur, they're quite static players. They're very good at what they do. I think they have a role to play in a squad. But certainly if you're sat there saying or tweeting or sending messages that those players are not good enough to play for Juventus, I think that's really unfair. I think aside from Khedira, I think all of those players are good enough to be at Juventus, but they certainly shouldn't be the second or third best midfielder at the club. So I think you have a lot of work to do there. I think in attack, I am very, very critical of anybody who is critical of Mario Mandzukic. I think if you don't understand what he does for Juventus, I'm not really sure that you understand football, if I'm perfectly honest.
And I think we saw that on Tuesday, to be honest.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And I think I don't think you can draw a straight line from if Mandzukic plays, Juve probably win, but I think it certainly wouldn't hurt. And his absence is certainly felt when he's not there. But I think if you have him, you have Bernardeschi, and you have Ronaldo in front of a more up-tempo, energetic midfield, I think you would see a massive difference. And what Mandzukic brings to the team would really matter. And I think the way that Mandzukic approaches the first 60, 65, 70 minutes is responsible for a lot of what Moises Keane has been able to achieve in the closing 20, 25 minutes of matches too. I think that's often overlooked is Keane's not coming on for Dybala and making pretty little runs down the right wing. He's coming on against central defenders who've had to deal with Mario Mandzukic for an hour and who think, oh, thank goodness he's gone off. Now we've just got this kid to deal with. And then Moises Keane's running past them because they're absolutely exhausted from the physical beating they've taken off Mandzukic. I think that really is a key factor in the success of Moises Keane. And people might want to laugh that off and say that Keane's talent is responsible for that. And I think in a lot of ways it is. Keane is a very talented player, but he's certainly not a player who you're going to start and play 90 minutes in the biggest matches just yet. I think he has a lot to offer. I think he's a player who will make a big impact over the coming years, hopefully, at Juve. But I think you certainly need something to complement that. And I think the option of playing him or Mandzukic alongside Ronaldo gives whoever the manager is plenty of options. And then on the other wing, we spoke about at length before and I've written about before, Bernardeschi for me is the ideal complement to round out that trio. And I'm really impressed with what I've seen from him. I think he's absolutely good enough. I think Douglas Costa is an exceptional impact player off the bench, or if you're playing one of the not the top four or five in Serie A, if you're playing at anybody else, you play with him from the start and give somebody a rest. I don't have any problem with that. I think you could probably say the same about Juan Cuadrado in certain matches. His tactical flexibility helps, I think. And I think you could, because of all of those, I think you could probably sell Paulo Dybala, which I'm sure is probably a player we'll come on to talk about. I think you could make a huge profit from selling Paulo Dybala and not really need to invest it in the attack. You can use that money in midfield and really, really improve the team. And that, I've said this elsewhere, and I'll repeat it again here, because if I don't, it's the only comment we'll probably receive. But that's not a criticism of Paulo Dybala. That is simply a recognition of the fact that if you have Cristiano Ronaldo, you need a player who can play as a number nine, but switch out to the wing. And I think Mandzukic and Keane can both do that. And we saw on Tuesday, Paulo Dybala certainly cannot. I he was completely negated and wasted played in that role. We've also seen that he can't do the same thing on the right wing. He gets sucked too deep. He gets drawn out of position. He doesn't take up the spaces that Juve need him to take up to exploit the defence. And Bernardeschi does, and Douglas Costa does, and Cuadrado does. So don't come back at me and tell me about Allegri playing in midfield, because other players can play that same role and thrive. It's just the fact that he doesn't fit with Cristiano Ronaldo. And we've seen that, whether it's been in a two with the two of them together, whether it's been in a three with Dybala on the wing, in a three with Dybala through the middle. It just doesn't work. And it's not a criticism of Paulo Dybala in any way. I think he's a fantastically gifted player. I think he's a super talented star who will go on to enjoy great things, but sadly he's not going to do that in Cristiano Ronaldo's Juve, and nor is he going to spend the next 2 or 3 years of his career as a backup to Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench, because he's too talented for that. And fair play to him, if he goes on and finds somewhere else and thrives, then that's great. It's much like Pippo Inzaghi left Juve when Trezeguet was there, because the two of them didn't work together and Del Piero was better with Trezeguet. And it's the same thing. You can't really play Ronaldo and Dybala together. Ronaldo works better with Mandzukic. And you've already got Moises Keane. You're going to stunt his growth if you keep another player around. So sell him, sacrifice him for the greater good, profit off him, invest that money elsewhere. However you want to explain it, the simple fact to me is what we've seen all season. Ronaldo and Dybala are like oil and water. The two just don't fit together. And you're not going to bench Ronaldo for Dybala. You're not going to have Dybala as a substitute in your biggest games, because it's a complete waste of his career and of his resources. So sell him and wish him well and enjoy watching him thrive somewhere else. But realize that if you sold him and bought Milinkovic-Savic, you were, I don't need to tell you that, you're the founder member, chairman of the Sergei Milinkovic-Savic fan club, but Juve would be so much better as a team and so much more effective when it matters. And yes, you can keep Dybala and you can go and win 10 Scudetti in a row, 12, whatever you want, put the number on it. But as long as he is there, I don't see how they're going to survive in the Champions League to get to where they want to go, which is winning it. You need a different type of player. And that it's not to say that Milinkovic-Savic is better than Dybala or anything. It's just a recognition that this team needs something different than he can offer. And sadly, for all concerned, I think even for Dybala's benefit, it's probably time to move on.
Well said. So, you know, not only do I love Milinkovic-Savic, but I say Dybala is my favorite Juve player, but I completely agree with that line of thinking. That makes a lot of sense to me. So you essentially answered the next question, which you talked at length about the midfield. I agree there. So let's close on this. Obviously, it was a disappointing exit in the Champions League, but Juve absolutely steamrolled Serie A. They had a very impressive match against Atletico. So when you think of this current edition of Juve, where do you rank it compared to the other ones that won the Scudetto in this cycle? So dating back to the first season under Antonio Conte.
I think you can probably... you can probably wipe off the first two Scudetti of Conte and say it's better than those, because I think those teams were very functional, but they didn't have the quality of players that this Juventus has got. I think they've accomplished the same thing, whether it's the undefeated season, which I think this team would have been fully capable of if they weren't playing in the Champions League. The second team was kind of getting used to playing in Europe, so they eased up a little bit and then got knocked out in the quarterfinals by Bayern Munich. I think they're probably better man for man than that team too. I think the third team of Conte, that's when you're adding Tevez and Llorente. I would probably say it's about even with that, because I think that team had that excellent midfield. I think they underperformed in that season, much like this team's probably underperformed in the overall big picture. I think that team, even though they got 102 points, I think, and this team could pretty much equal that or better it still. So I think probably on a par with that team. And then I think the year after, when Allegri came in and didn't really change anything, he added Morata and Pereira, but got to a Champions League final. I think that team was probably the best version of, in this whole cycle of seven, eight now Scudetti. I think that's probably the best version of all, because that still had the Pirlo, Pogba, Vidal midfield, but you also had Morata and Tevez, and you had Bonucci, and Allegri changed to a back four. And I think, apart from probably at fullback, where it was Lichtsteiner and Evra, where probably argue this team is better there if you have Cancelo, Spinazzola, Sandro, whichever combination, at their very best.
Absolutely. So, Adam, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Please keep up the great work on Serie A. Everyone follow Adam's columns. The Flow FC one's really a great concept. So I look forward to chatting with you in the future, Adam. So thanks again for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And that's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen to an enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.